Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast. Here we explore spiritual insights and practical strategies to help you cultivate a family life rooted in beautiful, self-giving love. Join us as we invite experts to share uplifting perspectives and actionable advice for navigating the joys and challenges of modern family dynamics. Welcome back to the podcast. Today on the show, I'm joined by Dr. Ryan Hanning, husband, father of 10, professor and co-author of The Willpower Advantage, Building Habits for Lasting Happiness. Dr. Hanning is a nationally recognized speaker and educator in virtue formation, leadership, and the intersection of faith and family life. And today, we'll be talking about one of the most foundational virtues of families, fortitude, and how we can practically grow in this strength through our daily routines, relationships, and moments of challenge. Dr. Hanning, welcome to the show, and we're so glad to have you.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we'd love to just kind of start to get to know you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about how you kind of came to, you have 10 kids, this is amazing. And how you kind of came to see that there was a need for this book, The Willpower Advantage.
Yeah. So I always say when I give a talk to a group that I never give a talk that I myself don't need to hear, right? I'm still mm-hmm. figuring this out. I'm still learning. Your fatherhood is an incredible place to grow in virtue. Being a husband is an incredible place to grow in God's plan for your life. And so really the book came out of a conversation that myself and the co-author Tom Peterson from Catholics Come Home, we've been dear friends for the last 20 years, speaking to groups, and then myself as a professor and teaching specifically classical philosophy, and then also theology as well. And recognizing that there is a real practical need to kind of rediscover the wisdom of the church in regards to virtue. Mm-hmm. And so it really started as a conversation as two husbands and fathers were trying to challenge each other to grow in holiness. And so Tom always tells a story, he's in Atlanta traffic, trying mm-hmm. not to cuss and saying, Lord, I need to grow in the virtue of temperance. And, and here I am, struggling with trying to manage a farm and mm-hmm. a professor and all that stuff, getting way too busy with things that distract me from my primary vocation, recognizing that I need to grow in the mm-hmm. virtue of self-control and also of fortitude. And so mm-hmm. out of that conversation, really came our own rediscovery of the virtues, and not in an abstract kind of intellectual way, but in a real, brass tacks on the ground, what does it mean to actually grow in virtue? And the reality is that in the life of the church, even all the way, during the time of Christ, his life, not only did he model virtue, but really he was instructing the disciples and the apostles on how to be fully alive, how to be the humans and the people that God made them to be. So I think for us, it was so exciting because part of our own personal rediscovery was a desire to share the good news about what virtue means in the life of, conforming our lives to Christ.
Mm, that's great. Excellent. And you're a professor. Where do you teach?
Yeah, so I've had the opportunity to teach. I'm sort of an itinerant professor now. I spent 5 years directing the program for University of Mary at Arizona State University. And then I also have taught for a number of different colleges, both secular, large, secular, small, mm-hmm. and Catholic as well. So I still continue to teach for University of Mary. And I also teach for the Institute of Catholic Theology. And I also teach over at Austin Peay. It's a beautiful thing to be able just to go where I'm called. And I also teach as a convent here at Aquinas College. Wow. So I get the, I have the apostolic novices this summer for the gospel. So I'm really excited about that. So
that's excellent.
So I've been a professor for 25 years, both large and small schools. And I can tell you, this has been one of the common themes, as I teach theology, right, properly understood how we understand who God is, the question comes up then, what does this mean for my life? How am I meant to deal with the vices that rob me of peace and joy? How am I to deal with the challenges of sin? And of course, all of that is tied up not only to the order of grace, but also our participation in God's plan to become the men and women God called us to be. So this has been something I've had the opportunity to teach kind of formally for 25 years, and then understand in my own life as well and deepen my own understanding of God's mission for me.
Right. Excellent. Very robust resume. I love it. It's great. So let's just start with we're focusing this month on fortitude. And how would you define fortitude, and why do you think it's such a critical virtue for family life?
Yeah. So I am fascinated with history. And so I love going back and saying, like, how is fortitude understood, you know, back then? Yeah. And I love etymology too, like look at the actual words and try to understand what's going on. And if we go back to the ancient Greek world, classical philosophy, fortitude was one of the most attractive of the virtues. This was the virtue of men and women who were able to strive to accomplish great things and were those who are courageous in the face of great challenges. And if you look at like Aristotle, he understood that courage really meant two components, right, of the human heart. It meant to have audacity, to be able to initiate action, to be able to jump into the fray, so to speak, but then also to persevere. And Alex Havard, who I know you have on the show as well, who's a dear friend and who's done a great job really of walking through the virtues in regards to, you know, leadership and what it means to lead, right? Leadership is not about technique, it's about character. And so you need to have virtue in order to lead. But fortitude is that specific virtue is really about audacity, being able to initiate and also being able to persevere. And the unique thing is, and Aquinas saw this in his own study, when he re-encountered Aristotle in the 1200s, 1300s, that some people are really good at initiating things, but they're not very good at persevering. And other people are very good at persevering, but they're not very good at audacity or initiating activity. And you really need both in order to be to have fortitude. So fortitude, the best definition is really to be courageous and to be willing to, initiate action and to be able to persevere or stay the course to see it to completion. This is such an important virtue, and back in history, it was one of the most attractive, because people who are courageous, built confidence in others. And we actually, it's interesting, when I give sort of a 3-day retreat where we sort of do a deep dive on the cardinal virtues, one of the things I point out about fortitude is that even to this day, there's been very good double-blind studies done about how fortitude is actually more contagious than fear. And so they set up experiments in which they'll have people in a room and they'll randomly initiate some panic. Either there's a fire, there's a gunman, there's something. And what they'll do is they'll have essentially a control group that doesn't know what's going on. And then one or two people planted that is meant to evoke a fear response. Like, we need to run, we need to get away. Then another set of people that are there that are meant to invoke a sort of a courageous response, like, don't panic, we got this, we can do it. And it's amazing. So they've done, these over the years. And what they have found, if one or two people have developed the virtue of courage, and you really do have to develop, right? The cardinal virtues are human and moral virtues. They require our participation with God's grace. They require our work and education. And so if there's a few virtuous people in the room, it actually elicits the courage of others. And so I've been fascinated with, fortitude specifically as it's played out in history and as it's been elevated in the great literature of the Western world as well. Think of all of the individuals, all the heroes that we aspire to be like, that the virtue they most often have that is so attractive is actually the virtue of fortitude, this ability to initiate and this ability to persevere and fulfill the duties they've been given.
That's excellent. Oh, I love that. And actually, considering that idea of that study where it's like the virtue, fear versus fortitude, and just kind of going deeper into like family life, I think, if we have strong families, could you argue for that same thing where if there's a family that is demonstrating fortitude in some capacity or whatever, there's a lot of ways to show that. But could you argue that also then that inspires other families as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I think so. The virtues are so fundamental in family life. In fact, family life is the typical arena in which we grow in the virtues. Whether that be our own family or family of origin, but also then the families that those who are called to marriage end up creating if they are blessed with children. And so, absolutely, I think fortitude very often is not talked about enough. We think of courage very often in modern day sort of psychology as more impulsive. As more of something that just sort of happens to you. But the reality is, no, it's a virtue. It's a muscle that you have to develop. You have to strengthen. No one would expect to go be a great athlete without ever practicing. Well, we can't expect to be courageous without practicing that virtue as well. Now, it is unique that the virtue of fortitude, there's also a complementary gift of the Holy Spirit that's fortitude. Mm-hmm. That can be that sort of, you know, that grace that's infused in our soul at baptism can manifest itself in dramatic ways, even without our practice. But the normative way, that the sure way for developing virtue, fortitude, is by practicing it. And so absolutely, that families that have this, and specifically fathers and mothers that operate not out of fear, but operate from trust, and and respond to those beautiful words which are written in scripture, you know, some scholars say 365 times, as if we need to hear it every day, which is be not afraid, right? Be not afraid. And so fortitude helps us to overcome that. You know, it helps us to overcome natural fear. It helps us to fulfill natural obligations and duties. It helps us to push against those things which are not good, beautiful, and true, and helps us to work hard and strive for those things that are difficult to achieve but are good, beautiful, and true.
And what would you say, your book is called The Willpower Advantage. How would you say fortitude and willpower are synonymous, or are they different?
Yeah, so when we talk about willpower, we're really talking, it's good to have a good sort of basic understanding of Christian anthropology. And one of my favorite things to do, even in a secular setting, just kind of walk through that the wisdom of the church as she's, you know, taught for the last 2,000 years. Now, properly understood, that every human, right, we've been endowed with particular gifts. First, we're created in the image and likeness of God. And even the words there in Hebrew, image and likeness, tetzlem and demut, literally mean in Hebrew, rational intellect and will. So we can see and perceive the world through our senses, but we can also choose how we move throughout the world, right? This is what makes us most like God. In fact, even the first sin of Eve, those two components that make us most like God, are rational intellect and will, are the very things she uses to choose against God. She perceives that the fruit is good, right? Delightful to the eyes. So she's using her senses. And then says, and she chooses, she uses her will to take it. And then same thing with Adam, right? Adam, when she offers it to him, takes it. So, within every human heart is a rational intellect and a will, but also an appetite, a desire for the things that we need because we are material. Because we are material, because we're corporal beings, we have physical needs. And this is a pre-fall reality. Only difference was prior to the fall, these needs were given to us perfectly by God. Now we have to work and strive for them, right? Through the toil of our work and the suffering of blood, sweat, and tears. Yeah. And so now work becomes pedagogical to help us in sort of participate with God's plan for our life. But this, you know, intellect, will, and appetite are the basic powers of the human soul. And Plato, the non-Christian, you know, scholar, you know, 400 years before Christ, he gets this and understands this in a really dramatic way. And I love his analogy and his image. And I think if there's any one lecture I give in any of my classes, when I do classical philosophy, or I also have a class called The Philosophy of Happiness, the philosophy of eudaimonia is the Greek word for flourishing. And every philosopher would have a sort of a treatise, including Jesus himself, with the Beatitudes of what it means to have a full, you know, a full lived life, what it means to be fully alive. Well, Plato describes it on like a fulcrum, on like a teeter-totter. He says on one side you have your intellect, and on the other side you have your appetite. And the funny thing is the appetite is larger than the intellect. And let's just test this for a moment, right? When I sit down and there is a piece of cheesecake in front of me, my intellect tells me, right, I can maybe have a few bites because I haven't worked out today. I don't need the caloric intake. It's not good for me. There's too much sugar, saturated fats, whatever. My intellect, that whole dialogue is happening in my mind. But there's another side of me that's saying, that cheesecake looks really fulfilling. I really want that cheesecake. And very often, at least, you know, speaking for myself, very often my appetite wins out just naturally. And this is just the way that we've been made. But there's something else there. There's the will, our ability to choose. And Plato says, think of if the appetite is the bigger kid on the teeter-totter, right, in the intellect. The will either gets aligned with the appetite or with the intellect. And here's what he says, very interesting. He says, when the will is aligned with the appetite, when what you choose is always aligned with your appetite, with your desires, it suppresses the intellect. And in his words, he says, you become vicious. That word means vice-filled, right? You become animalistic. You become non-human. You no longer, those dual properties that make us most like God, rational intellect and will, our intellect's now suppressed. He says, but the interesting thing is, on the flip side, when our will is aligned with our intellect, it doesn't suppress the appetite. It doesn't kill the appetite. It doesn't destroy it. No, it liberates the appetite so that our desires are purified for those things that are actually good, beautiful, and true for us. And this image then is just, I think, really telling about the complexity of the human heart, right? Mm-hmm. And so the virtues then come to perfect those. So the supernatural virtues of faith, hope, and love supernaturally perfect our intellect, our will, and our appetite. So mm-hmm. faith supernaturally perfects our intellect. Because what's our intellect? The pursuit of truth, right? Yeah. Hope comes to supernaturally perfect our will. Because our will, every choice we make is a will towards something that we believe will fulfill us. Right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then love comes to perfect our appetites. And so the supernatural virtues, theological virtues, supernaturally perfect these components of the human soul. But the cardinal virtues, the moral virtues, naturally perfect them. So what naturally perfects our intellect? The practice of prudence. What naturally perfects our will? The practice of justice. What naturally perfects our appetite? And here's where... I love Thomas. Thomas dives deep here. Yeah. St. Thomas Aquinas really gets in to the details and minutia. But the appetite has two components. Our mm-hmm. appetite has what's called a concupiscible appetite, those things that desire some objective good right in front of us or are averse to something that's objectively bad. Mm-hmm. And then we have an irascible appetite, so that appetite that strives for difficult things, right? Either mm-hmm. good things or runs away from great difficulty. Mm-hmm. And so the virtues then, the cardinal virtues, the moral virtues of temperance and mm-hmm. fortitude are meant to help really develop our appetite mm-hmm. so we can desire those things that are good, beautiful, and true. Mm-hmm. So temperance comes to perfect our concupiscible appetites so that we desire those things that are right in front of us that are good for us. And then fortitude or courage naturally perfects our irascible appetite. Those things that are difficult to start, difficult to dive into, mm-hmm. or difficult to persevere. And mm-hmm. specifically in family life, then that component, the desires that we have for the future, the desires we have to persevere, the desires we have to achieve something great for ourselves and for our mm-hmm. children and for our husbands and our wives, this requires the virtue of fortitude. This mm-hmm. requires courage. And so mm-hmm. this image, I think, is so telling and so yeah. a beautiful illustration sort of a Christian anthropology, right? Yeah. God provides us with these gifts infused in our heart at baptism mm-hmm. to supernaturally perfect these components of our soul. Mm-hmm. But we also have our work to do, which is the right. development of these virtues in our life to practice prudence, practice temperance, practice justice. Right. And then, yes, of course, like we're talking about today, practice fortitude. And so in our book, we kind of go through some practical ways to do this. So I think a lot of times we overcomplicate the development of virtues.
Mm. Well, and I love how you kind of broke that down. I love how you, thank you so much for kind of sharing like that explanation of the appetites, because as you're just talking about, I'm like, oh, I think of children, just because they're so easy to think of in the sense of like appetites and like the willpower and all those things, and how we have to teach them how to like children just innately, like we have to help them basically yep. become virtuous. And so thinking about those different aspects of our appetites, that's very helpful, I think, for parents to, if you understand, I know it sounds so philosophical and so deep, but it's also so helpful to say, okay, kids just don't have that naturally. Like we have to help them.
Yeah. We have to train them up. I mean, this is, you know, and we have to train ourselves too. It's mm-hmm. it's just like any other muscle. This is the reality of it, right? These powers of our soul are very similar to the powers of our body. We have mm-hmm. to train them up. I cannot sit here and say, I'm going to be the best concert violinist ever, mm-hmm. having never picked up a violin, right? Mm-hmm. That would just be insanity, right? So mm-hmm. same thing with temperance. If I'm struggling with something, I need to practice that virtue, right? It mm-hmm. becomes a habitual disposition towards the good, which just means a constant choosing towards the good. Mm-hmm. Same thing with fortitude. The only way to become courageous is to practice courage. And you practice in the mm-hmm. little things and in the daily mm-hmm. choices we make. And then we get, you know, to the bigger things. And it's interesting. We, part of the book, we actually looked about 40 different stories of incredible heroism and being really courageous. And there is one really funny one. We included a short little excerpt in the book about an actor. His last name is Trejo. He's a really famous actor. He plays the bad guy mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. Oh. And he grew up in Southern California. And he always kind of plays like a gang member or a gang boss or something. Mm. Well, like 6 years ago, he's driving down the road and a car flips in front of him and a mother and child are trapped inside. And he goes and he like, you know, he's a big guy. So he pulls him out and like the car's on fire. It's a really dramatic scene. And he just, you know, he talks to the police and then he leaves. And the media, you know, tracks him down to interview, you know, Danny Trejo saved this family. And they ask him like, you know, hey, you know, like, how'd you do this? Or what was running through your head? And he goes, you know, the reality is, he goes, I reflect on this later. He goes, I've done a million other smaller things that prepared me to be able to respond that moment, which is really beautiful. So he kind of understood, right? That courage, yes, it can, sometimes, you know, we hear these amazing stories, but very often, if you reflect on it, it's because you are practicing being courageous in your fidelity to your spouse. You are practicing being courageous and waking up on time to serve your children. You are practicing being courageous, you know, changing diapers, you name it. There's a million opportunities in family life to develop and strengthen this gift of fortitude so that when the time comes, you can be truly courageous. And we see this in the lives of the saints. We see this in the lives of the great heroes throughout Western literature. And so, yes, fortitude is a virtue that we desperately need to re-encounter and really reimagine in our lives, what it means to be people of courage, to be people who are not afraid, and who are people who are willing to do the work necessary to grow and strengthen this really important spiritual muscle of the virtue of fortitude.
You had mentioned you're kind of in the midst of learning things as you go through your life. You have 10 kids. You live on a farm. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yep. And so I'm curious how you help your own children build those virtues of fortitude based on where you're at in your life right now. And even with them, you know, either interacting with peers or, you know, how does that look for your family life?
Yeah. So there's two ways that we can think about this. And the way I like to do it with my children, and I wish they were here because then you could ask them whether I'm succeeding. I would love to hear as well. But the one way is to really help them think through, you know, about encountering battles or obstacles. So when you come up against an obstacle, you have some options. So the first option is to run away. And a lot of people do that. Right? And that's cowardice, right? That's essentially the opposite of having the virtue of fortitude. But there's another temptation, which is just to run into the obstacle or challenge ill-equipped. And that usually leads to, in the case of war, it'll lead to death. In the case of, farming is probably going to lead towards some injury, right? If we run into some obstacle we're not prepared for. Or there's another option, which is to ignore it. A lot of people do that. I'm not going to run away. I'm not going to engage. I'm just going to kind of, you know, ignore the problem and just let it sit underneath the surface. Or you can prepare yourself to engage. And so really fortitude is really important here because it means making a decision in those moments of obstacle, uncertainty, difficulty that, yes, I am going to engage. I'm not going to run away. I'm not going to ignore it. And nor am I just going to run into it ill-prepared. Right? I'm going to take a deep breath and say, Lord, I need the virtue of fortitude. Help me develop it. Right. And so to be able to enter into it. So a lot of what we do with our children is we try to train them up that their default response in the time of temptation, in the time of trial, in the time of challenge is with God's grace and with my effort, I can do this. Right. So just this natural default towards fortitude, which means encouraging people. Right? So it's like kids, a lot of them is building them up, preparing them and encouraging them. And then recognizing that, a lot of times we can't do it on our own. A lot of times we need help. And so just helping them really understand then that fortitude, first and foremost is a willingness to engage, a willingness to suffer, a willingness to persevere till the very end. And so trying to orient them. So, you know, that'd be one way. Second way would be more like task-based, right? Mm-hmm. Ensuring that when they do something, did you do it to the best of your ability and did you finish it? This is so important for building grit. So often in my own life, it would be way easier for me just to do it. You know, my son knocks on my door, says, hey, Dad, I want to, we make gifts for each other. It sounds cute, but it's also because we're really cheap. So, 10 kids, we're going to make gifts for each other.
Yeah.
And so the kids make gifts for each other. And it's a lot easier for me if my son comes in, you know, give you an example this Christmas, as I want to make a jewelry box for his sister. It would be a lot easier for me just to do it. Right. Or to have him watch me do it. But I have to stop and say, wait a minute, this is an opportunity for him to grow in fortitude. It's an opportunity for him to walk through, to initiate action, to actually, you know, have the grit and determination and perseverance to fulfill it towards the end, and then have the satisfaction that comes from doing that. Mm-hmm. So very often in my own life, I have to stop and say, wait a minute, for my child to understand the virtue of fortitude, I need to let them build that muscle, which means I need to let them struggle a little bit. I need to let them persevere. I need to let them finish. I need to let them, you know, have the audacity to initiate action, to be motivated towards some idea or some end. So too often I find my temptation as a father is to do it for them. And we live in a culture that tends to tell parents that you're a better parent if you do it for them, that your principal obligation in life is to help your kid be satisfied as opposed to actually help them be happy. And there is a difference. And so fortitude, you know, there's all these opportunities to help my children learn it. But first and foremost, they're gonna see it in my own life. And for me, you know, in the book, we walk through this, we kind of triage and we build upon the work of Alex Havard. He does this beautifully with the cardinal virtues, and then we do it with a total of 13 virtues. And we pull a lot on St. Catherine of Siena, St. Teresa of Avila, as well as St. Thomas Aquinas. But, you know, every temperament, the temperament you have, the natural biological disposition you've been given, you know, it's not who you are. It's the foundation upon which you build your personality. Properly understood, your temperament plus your character equals your personality. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for me as a sanguine, when I ask for fortitude, I'm not asking God to help me to start things. I have no problem. I can start. You can walk with me on the farm right now and you can find 50 projects I've started. Yeah. But God help me if I can finish one of them. Because what I need is I need perseverance, right? Mm-hmm. I need the willingness to stay the course, the willingness to get it done. Mm-hmm. So I need to be self-reflective and say, how do I need to grow in virtue of fortitude so that I can be a witness of it to my children? Mm-hmm. Right? And this is even something just, you know, I'm working on right now personally, is that, you know, part of fortitude is bearing it well. Mm-hmm. So if I'm persevering, but I'm complaining the entire time, right? Yeah. It's not really having the effect it should in my life. It's really not helping me grow in fortitude. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of scriptures that talk about this, right? Mm-hmm. And so part of my own personal journey is, okay, I recognize this, I know this about myself. And so for me, when I ask the Lord to help me with fortitude, what I'm asking him, which is a dangerous prayer, by the way, which is to say, Lord, give me opportunities to persevere. Give me opportunities to suffer. And then help me suffer well, right? Help me go through the motions, you know, up this morning before I wanted to be because our neighbor called and our sheep were out, right? Okay. Am I going to do this with fortitude, with perseverance to do it right without complaining, demonstrate that to my children? Or am I going to, you know, drag myself out of bed, kicking and screaming? So there's lots of opportunities to develop this virtue, practice it, and then teach it to children.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned kind of the self-awareness of knowing what you can and cannot do. Like, that's also very powerful. How do you help your children recognize that? Because you did mention, you know, when they come to you with a project or with an idea or something, it's easy to just do it. You know, like, I think you're right, and that culture falls into that a lot. But how can you help you teach your children to know their limits, but then also to not limit them even more, I guess. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense.
So here's what I have found, and I think I'm still learning this and seeing and it's fun to talk to my older children now that I have adult children who can reflect back and give us input on how we're raising our younger children. It's a really cool time. It's a really exciting time. I'm enjoying it much more than I thought I would. One of the things that we have found is that children can get discouraged. Mm-hmm. And so one of the most important things is that, you know, it's not that they get discouraged, it's how they respond to it. Mm-hmm. And so we live in this really weird culture that on one hand says you should have everything, but then on the other hand says you're really not worth much. Right. And so it's a tenuous place for most children to be, especially like teenagers. And so I think a lot of what we try to do is to help our children not to be discouraged, but that their response in the face of something difficult is to say, what do I need to be able to achieve this? And this is about self-awareness and then also about willingness to ask for help. Mm-hmm. There's a great story in Plato in the Republic when he talks about the virtue of fortitude. And he says, you know, there's this man who's with his troops, and the enemy's come up the hill. And the one guy doesn't even put on his armor, says, there is the enemy, let's go and fight. And he runs and he just gets mauled down, totally ill-prepared. Mm-hmm. And then another guy says, we will never win, let's run. Mm-hmm. And then another guy says, no, stop, let's chasten ourselves. Let's identify how much time we have and let's use that time well so we can enter into battle ready. So, mm-hmm. so much of it in terms of fortitude is taking that time. What do I need to do to be able to do this action well? What do I need mm-hmm. to do to be able to persevere? And so I think a lot of what we try to do as parents, and we try to do it for ourselves too, is say, okay, hey, here's a trial. Here's a challenge. Here's something that's going to take some significant work or investment of time or money. What do we need to do so that we are most capable of fulfilling that and persevering mm-hmm. and actually developing the virtue of fortitude? Mm-hmm. So this is where, you know, prudence is the queen of the virtues, right? Prudence does help us be more fortuitous. But I mean, I think to build fortitude, really for us, a lot of times is just making sure we equip our children that mm-hmm. they're not prone to despair, that their base assumption is that with God's help and the help of others, they can persevere, but they need to do their part to achieve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Oh, perfect. And what would you say to parents who kind of, let's say they've maybe been a little influenced by the culture or just have no idea where to begin with their children? I know there's different ages and it looks a little different for each child, but because you mentioned teenagers, you mentioned, you know, little kids, but what advice or encouragement would you give to those parents who, let's say, are kind of struggling and just don't know where to begin with forming that fortitude in their children?
Yeah. So two things. One, the virtues in young children often look like vices. So when my 5-year-old says, no, I don't want to eat the carrots, and he's standing his ground, if he's doing so respectfully, that's actually a good thing, right? He doesn't want it. He's holding his ground, right? Like, now, the challenge is he needs to eat the carrots. So there needs to be this balance. So I think first is to help parents really recognize, you know, so we always say we punish sin, but we don't punish vice. We train away vice. So if there's something they're doing that's just vice, you know, the opposite of virtue, we try to help them grow in that virtue. But now if they're sinful, we're like, hey, you know, we're going to nip that in the butt. We're going to take care of it. Right. We're going to redirect it. We're going to address it, you know, in the best way we can, depending on the age. But really when it comes, most of the activity of children very often is just, they don't know. We have to train them up in the virtues. And so for parents, don't get discouraged. Every failure of your child, every mess up is an opportunity for them to learn. This is what being a child is. And we need just to take the time to do that. I know it's hard. It's not easy. You know, I tell the story about how about 3 months ago, I showed up to Mass and we were there 5 minutes early, which with 10 kids is like a miracle. Yeah. Usually we're driving 2 separate cars because some of our kids are serving or I'm helping out and then the other kids are running in. So not only were we 5 minutes early, all the kids' hair was done. Amazing. Oh, all the kids had shoes on. Amazing. And I was really sitting there before Mass, really proud of myself and looking at all our beautiful children. And right when the procession started, my son tugged on my jacket and said, Dad, I'm not wearing any underwear, right? So my 5-year-old had gone to church commando style. So, you know, we never bat 100%. Like there's always something. So, you know, don't get discouraged. You know, parents, you're the primary educator. Don't get discouraged. So two things. One, have the willingness to train up your children in virtue. And really try to help them grow. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, you yourself do the work necessary to try to be as virtuous as you can. Yeah. This is not about you know, being perfect or hiding your wounds or your brokenness or hiding your inabilities, but recognizing them and then by God's grace participating in his plan to grow in these strengths, right? When we pray for these virtues and we ask God to help us with any of these virtues or even the minor ones like patience, he will give us the opportunities to practice them. There's no sure way to grow in sanctity than by living in the family. It's part of God's plan. So don't get discouraged. Use these opportunities to teach your children virtue and especially teach them fortitude, this ability to initiate and ability to persevere, because it becomes so important in directing the appetites, our desires for what's truly good and beautiful for us.
Excellent. Wow. Thank you so much. Can you share with us where our audience can find this excellent book, The Willpower Advantage, and any other things that you're working on?
Sure. You're welcome to go to my website at ryanhanning.com. You can also find The Willpower Advantage on Ignatius Press, major Catholic bookstores, and even a few airports. I've always been traveling lately.
That's fun.
But yeah, through Ignatius Press, and would love to have you read the book for sure. But definitely go on to ryanhanning.com. Lots of resources there, and you can even see some little bits and pieces of our family life here on the farm, how we try to grow in virtue every day through our joys and our failures.
Yes. No, the blog is excellent. I love it. So Dr. Ryan, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing with us this honestly very eye-opening and just helpful, I think, breaking it down for the virtue of fortitude so that we can actually implement it within our own family. So thank you so much for being on the show.
All right, my pleasure. God bless.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2025, we are continuing to share the beautiful devotion to Mary, Mother of Ferris Love, while providing practical tools and advice for parents, couples, and families. You can help us with this mission by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovefamilyproject.org.